In a mind-blowing twist, magic mushrooms evolved twice.
Twice?
Twice, independently.
Independently?
Independently.
Wow, those are some magic mushrooms.
Yeah.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune into Real Science.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Fred Williams.
And I'm Doug McBurney. And Fred, I got a bone to pick with you, mister.
You do?
Yes, I do. I hate to drop this on you by surprise, but I didn't want you to be able to prepare for this because I want to get to the bottom of it.
Okay.
So it's been long known among our circle of friends that you're intolerant. Particularly of lactose.
There you go. That I am intolerant of lactose.
And it's well known among our circle of friends how I love lactose and all lactose products, especially whole milk and especially milkshakes.
Well, let me say something, Doug. I love lactose too.
Oh.
But the people around me don't.
That's what I've heard.
I'm being conscientious of the people around me.
I got you. Well, it's well known that for quite some time, you've been very highly intolerant of lactose. And so I want the audience to know that when I'm in Denver, I sometimes stay at Fred's house. He has an extra room. He puts me up. It's very nice, by the way. If you ever come to Denver, give Fred a call. Anyway, but I was not aware that I could catch lactose intolerance from Fred. And I want to get to the bottom of why in the last 3 months, Fred, since I stayed at your house the last time, I have developed what I think is lactose intolerance.
Oh, interesting.
Never had that problem in my life. You didn't tell me that it was communicable.
Well, hey, you know, maybe we've discovered something new on Real Science Radio.
That what?
But if I had to make a prediction, and we do make predictions on the show, that it wasn't something you got from me. I predict it was a mutation or something in your body, a switch. I hate to use the word mutation because it sounds like it's a negative or it's like it's a fault. And there are faulty parts of our gene because of the fall.
Yeah.
But there's also this belief that God turns something in, has something in our body that turns off our need for milk after a certain age.
Mm.
Now, usually I think that age is probably a lot younger than you are.
I know. I have people, they laugh at me because I order milk at a restaurant with people I work with, and they're like, what are you, like in second grade? You're ordering milk? I said, well, if we're going to have a steak, I like to have milk.
Yeah.
Anyway, Fred, I actually want to tell people that I did a little research because I was going to hold you up and be very upset for you giving me lactose intolerance. But it turns out as we get older, there seems to be a genetic switch that causes us to produce less of the enzyme that processes lactose efficiently through. But there are supplements that I may be able to take that would enable me to again enjoy lactose. Milkshakes primarily are the one thing that's...
Oh, yeah. I hated giving up milkshakes. Oh. Now, there is, what are they, lactaid pills.
But yeah, yeah.
Thank goodness they actually work for me. So if I am going to eat something that has milk in it, like there's some really good Italian dishes that I like at this macaroni grill.
Yeah.
And so I'll take three, you have to take three for whatever reason for the particular brand that I got, but it seems to work.
Okay.
You know, for the most part, I'd say it's 90% effective.
All right. Well, I'm going to keep that in mind the next time I decide to binge on lactose. But for now, I went through experiments, Fred. I was cutting out different foods. I cut out soda pop because I never drank soda pop, but then I got into it. And then I cut that out and that wasn't it. And then I go a few days without milk and I'm like, oh, it was milk. I was hoping, please don't be milk. Please don't be milk. But it turns out it was milk that was messing with my stomach. And
okay.
All right. So
this is Real Science Radio's milk show, right?
Now that we've got your attention, not. Ladies.
Yeah.
And
so
gentlemen,
we're going to do a latest science news. And, you know, we're going to get to some really good ones like geology's biggest unsolved mystery.
Yes.
According to the secular scientists, for us, it's not unsolved. But, Doug, before we do that, this is, you know, telethon month for us.
That's
we're
right.
Trying to raise extra funds to keep us on the air. Now, the good news is we're on AM 670 KLTT in Denver. It's the most powerful station in Denver. Our signal reaches, you know, the adjacent states.
Yeah.
And we're now on at 12:30 p.m.
Right in the middle of the lunch hour.
Really good time slot. Yeah. But guess what? They don't pay us to be on their radio station. They can't. They can't afford to do it. We have to pay them.
That's right. Our skills are so highly valuable, there's no way they could afford to pay us.
So we have to pay them. So we don't have any big churches backing us or anything, but we do have a great set of listeners.
We do have great listeners. We don't get any money from the Tides Foundation or from the State Department or anybody. So we rely on you.
Yeah.
We rely on other believers.
Maybe we could get something from the State Department now that they're not funding
NPR. That's right. We should send in an application to Dan Bongino that he could submit it over there to the State Department and maybe get us in on some of that NGO money.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we are shooting for, I think we set a goal of like $20,000 for our telethon in October.
Yep.
So if you can help us out, you can sponsor a show, you know, maybe become an RSR insider for, you know, maybe $200 a month.
Yes.
You can advertise your business on our show, all kinds of different ways. So just go to rsr.org/store or rsr.org/sponsor. And please help us out whichever way you can. We use that money, again, to keep us on the air in Denver. So if you live in Denver especially, you know, help us out. Hey, if you don't live in Denver, we still want your help to not only stay on the air on radio, but also our YouTube channel. I know we're up over 60,000 subscribers. I haven't checked lately. But we continue to grow there. And if you like our program and want more people to have access to it, we use that money to help the production of the show. We've got a great team of producers, and we can use that money to do a little bit of advertising and lots of different ideas we have going forward. So please help us
out. That's right. So if you want to be involved in a ministry that promotes creation and points people toward Jesus Christ by glorifying our Creator, by pointing out the magnificence of His creation, we need your help. So go to realscienceradio.org. RSR.org?
RSR.org.
RSR.org and help us out. Help us stay on the air. AM radio, by the way, when the apocalypse comes, all this internet stuff out the window. AM radio, it's going to be there. Yeah. So if you want us to stay on through the apocalypse, whatever the next one is, help us stay on AM radio. Regular old-fashioned terrestrial radio. I love it. I love AM radio. I grew up on AM radio. So help us stay on AM 670 KLTT.
Even you younger generation, I know right now you're rolling your eyes. It's like, what's AM radio? Uh-huh. You know, what's FM radio? You got your podcast. But guess what? You know, like Doug said, there is a value to radio. The older generation still really likes it.
Mm.
And hey, it's convenient. You're in your car. Tune into us and, you know, you'll learn a lot of real science.
Yes.
So, Doug, the first story, I mentioned it earlier, is geology's biggest unsolved mystery.
Oh, boy.
Now, this is from a channel called Today I Learned Science. It's the person who...
So, is that Today I Learned Science? That's interesting just to analyze. Let's let the host speak, and then we can analyze the...
Yeah, so we're going to play her video clip. Now, this is the person who runs this channel is Dr. Harini Behat. I know I'm not saying that right, but it's B-H-A-T, so Bhat, Bhat, Hat.
That is such...
From India, I believe.
That is such a Midwestern white guy way to... It's
Harini Behat.
The doctor's name. And so when you see this person, and you know what? I'm going to wait because I don't want to... I'm going to wait on that, but I have a comment on that. It's Harini Bhat.
Is that how you say it?
Harini Bhat.
Okay. Very good.
Or if you're from Denver... Harini Behat. I love it, Fred. Okay, there's too many vowels in that name for a Midwestern guy who grew up in... You're from Denver, like born and raised, Fred?
Pretty much.
Yeah, so if you're from Denver, born and raised, something like that, it's a little difficult, but we're here to help. And Dr. Bhat is here to help, or at least she's here.
She is here to help.
Material.
Here to help. We'll see. So we're going to play a short that she did. And this was actually sent to us by a listener. So we want to thank that listener.
Yes.
Appreciate you guys sending us this stuff.
Thanks for
your contribution. I wanted to play this because it's just interesting, her worldview and what leads her to certain conclusions. So let's watch this thing from Dr. Harini Behat, who in her own words is a pharmacist turned science storyteller.
Okay.
So here we go.
One of geology's biggest mysteries is this. A gap in the Earth's rock record so extensive that it's been called geology's missing chapter. It's formally known as the Great Unconformity, and it shows up around the world. It represents anywhere from 250 million to 1.5 billion years of missing geological history. Right. For example, at the Grand Canyon, you can literally place your hand on the boundary where 550 million-year-old rock sits on top of 1.7 billion-year-old rock.
4,000
over a billion years simply missing. What makes it so bonkers is that this isn't a local phenomenon.
Bonkers?
This has been identified on New York City? Continent. So what the heck happened? Here's what we know so far. During this missing period, Earth was really going through it. A lot of major things were happening on Earth. The first complex life emerged, possible snowball Earth, global glacial events occurred, and oxygen built up in the atmosphere. Yet the rock record for these really pivotal moments for our planet have been erased. So the big mystery that scientists are still trying to answer is, why did that chapter on Earth get wiped out? We don't have a definitive answer, but there is one leading hypothesis, which is the most extreme erosion event in Earth's history. The erosion required to create the Great Unconformity would have ground down entire mountain ranges, scraping continents down to just their crystalline basement rocks. Experts believe this wasn't just a gradual whittling down over time, but violent erosion, possibly moving 3 to 5 kilometers of rock across entire continents. Now, the energy needed to do that is a lot. If Earth was an onion, instead of slowly peeling away the continental crust layers one at a time, this erosion event was like ripping off 10 layers at once across an area the size of North America. Here's where it gets scientifically spooky. After this massive eruption, the Cambrian explosion happens. Some scientists believe these two events are connected. The thinking is the erosion could have released massive amounts of nutrients into the ocean, triggering evolutionary innovation. And we see the evidence for that in the rocks. Thermochronology studies reveal that rocks now at Earth's surface were once buried 5 to 10 kilometers deep, then rapidly exposed. An isotopic signature suggests unprecedented levels of continental material dumped into the oceans. But the Great Unconformity still remains a mystery because we still don't fully understand what caused this to happen everywhere around the world and to this magnitude. It shows our planet is basically capable of wiping its own geological memory on a global scale. And begs the question, what other critical chapters of Earth's history might be missing? Follow for more spooky science theories all October long. Make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel because we are dropping our very first and very special Halloween episode at the end of this month.
The first
Genesis chapter 6. Is it 6 or 7? I might have messed that up.
7 and 8.
Yeah, 6, 7, 8.
Yeah, 6, 7, 8. They're not missing. They're in there. Well, so first of all,
there's not a great unconformity in the Bible.
So anyway, I've watched this video before with you as we were preparing for the show, but I was not aware that this person is a pharmacist. This person is prescribed, or I don't know what you call a pharmacist. This person is mixing up the medicine for other humans. This child. Anyway, it's terrifying that this is a... She's obviously has a college degree. She's making a living parsing out drugs in the back of Walgreens or whatever. That's just kind of scary. That a person who could be this vacuous about geology, which, by the way, the greatest mystery in geology is how that qualifies as a science. To me, how geology in general qualifies as a science.
I'm right there with you, you know.
It just seems like there's an awful lot of wiggle room in geology, maybe more than you could... So much wiggle room that it's hard to say it's an actual science. It's not like biology or chemistry. Chemistry, there's not a lot of wiggle room in chemistry.
You don't take chemistry as your extra class if you want to get the automatic A in college. No. I'm sorry, but every college I know of, the geology is, hey, I'm taking geology because everybody gets an A in it.
Yeah, so that's the biggest mystery. But
you only have to be right, you know, maybe 30%, 50% of the time, and you're right there in step with geology.
Exactly. Exactly. So
sorry to our geologists out there. I do have geologist friends, and you know, there's very worthwhile work that they have to do for the companies they work for. But geology as a science is very abstract. There's lots of wiggle room, like you said.
Yeah.
And so here, this person, You know, she put together a good video in this, as far as her content that she presents, but she's been indoctrinated by the public schools and colleges on this secular worldview of millions of years. And yet it's common sense that this thing, first of all, you got a flat gap, all these flat gaps. And she talks about erosion and how there's some big erosion event. Okay.
Yeah.
You're actually confirming what creationists have always said, that you can't have these flat gaps all over the place and have it be millions of years of a layer, then another layer formed over it. You can't, that's not possible. So these layers aren't millions of years old, because if you say you've got a layer of a million years, that's a lot of time for water, which is the universal solvent, right?
Yeah.
And you know, you've got the effects of cavitation. And cavitation is incredible.
Powerful.
It's powerful. Basically, what it is this localized event where these water bubbles, basically, they can boil and reach up to like 20,000 Kelvin.
Yes.
I think that's like 35,000
degrees Fahrenheit.
Fahrenheit.
It's like the sun.
Yeah, it's like the surface of the sun. Yeah. It's like a mini plasma event.
Yes.
It's incredibly powerful. And everybody who's lived near a flood or has seen the results of a local flood, they know what water can do. I remember when we had the flooding in Colorado, it was remarkable. I'm driving to work and it's like just a big marshland that, like, basically lakes next to this drive I go to work that aren't there normally. And just the way it carved out this guy's driveway was like, had like a 7 foot.
Yeah.
His driveway was gone. And there was 7 foot of a layer there that, of course, it took millions of years for that layer to form and ruin his driveway. Right. But anyways, cavitation can do incredible amount of damage, and it can, it allows water to cut through solid rock like butter. Mm-hmm. And so with these flat gaps, where's the erosion marks? So they have to pretty much say that this was a catastrophic event, but they refuse to go to where the truth is. We know the science, whenever the Bible touches on science, it's right all the time.
That's right. Always.
And there's just no way that this was, they can't explain it. But they do come up with some catastrophic event that happened.
Mm-hmm.
How about open up first chapter of Genesis and
open
your
up
professors
the first book
don't
of the
want
Bible.
You to do, and you'll find out what really happened.
Yes. And so she does say that the rocks are a record, and that is true. The rocks are a record of what happened, but she immediately assumes that the rocks are the records of millions and millions of years. In fact, she said some point in the video, here's what we know so far. And then she said a bunch of things that we don't actually know. She just blurted out a bunch of assumptions and suppositions that have been made about what we think might have happened. But she says, here's what we know so far. Hey, Doc. Are pharmacists doctors? I don't think they're actually doctors.
I don't know, actually.
But I think when they're actually mixing up the medicine that they're going to give you to that it could kill you or make you better, I think you're hoping that they have some clinical credentials and capabilities and ability to reason and count and things like that. So maybe you don't have to be a doctor, but Doc, there's a whole bunch of stuff we don't know that you just said, well, here's what we know, and I don't want to say it's deliberately misleading, but whoever taught you to speak like that, Doc, they deliberately misled you.
Exactly.
You can't say, here's what we know so far, and then say a bunch of stuff that's not proven true.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You know, many of us, of creation scientists and people who accept creation now, many of them did believe this stuff because that's what they were taught, and they were brainwashed on it.
Yes.
I know for 30 years of my life, I believed in millions of years and all that nonsense.
Sure.
But when you're exposed, like we help expose to you the truth of what the science actually says, Real Science Radio, that's what we're here for.
Right.
You need to hear the other side of the story. And, you know, I wanted to mention, so we had that memorial to the great Dr. Walt Brown, who went to be with the Lord recently, and
we got this
great, one of the greatest books, my favorite creation book, it's In the Beginning.
Yeah.
He starts with the very first words of the Bible.
Yep.
Compelling Evidence for Creation and the Flood. The 9th edition is supposed to come out pretty soon. This is the 8th edition, but I highly encourage people, if you can, to try to find this book. But you might want to wait here for a month or two. We're going to have the 9th edition.
Yes.
And we're also developing flyers and whatnot. And we need to get the truth out about what really happened with Noah's flood. And what she presented in that entire video is evidence. It's much better evidence for a global flood than it is their secular nonsense of millions of years of rock above this unconformity and millions of years below it.
Right. Just the whole idea that there's all this. Also, 250 million to 1.5 billion. She says that much time could be missing. First of all, Doc, you would not allow that kind of differential if you were mixing up drugs. Well, maybe I'm going to mix in 250 million parts, but maybe 1.5 billion. Doc, you would never allow that large. So that just to say that we're not sure if it's 250 million, maybe it's 1.5 billion. So that's way too much. You're obviously wrong about that assumption. It just can't be that great of a difference. So throw that idea out. It's not 250 million to 1.5 billion years of missing time. That's silly. It is something that you can observe. And people say, well, Doug, you know, the global flood is just a Christian myth. It's not proven. Well, this lady just pointed out a bunch of evidence for it. There's a bunch of evidence for it in the one book that has proven to be the most reliable historical record in the history of the world, which is the Bible. There's all kinds of evidence for it in the Bible. And then if you go out and look at the rocks, there's more evidence than Dr. Behat has pointed out. There's even more evidence. There's massive amounts of evidence. There's an entire globe of evidence that Dr. Brown covers in his book. Yeah. There's all kinds of evidence for the global flood. So the global flood is a far more credible theory, if you want to call it a theory, I think it's proven, than this idea that we have this missing gap of time. And then Fred, the Cambrian explosion occurred afterward. Because of this event, nutrients were poured into the ocean from which the Cambrian explosion. It's like
all these major, major forms of life suddenly appear. That's what the Cambrian explosion is.
Right.
Major body plans for all these different, you know, invertebrates and vertebrates, and it all just suddenly appears with no time to evolve. I mean, because the Cambrian explosion, the time keeps shrinking of how long something could even evolve from that.
Right.
And so they have to dream up some kind of magic wand to try to explain the Cambrian explosion.
Fred, this but poor girl.
Explains it.
The flood explains why there is this sudden
millions
appearance.
Of dead things buried by water all over the earth, whatever Ken Ham's, you know, I can't.
Yes, in a very short period
very
of
well
time.
Stated.
Right? So, yes, it looks like an explosion of life, but it was actually an explosion of death. It was God's judgment on the world that destroyed everything and killed everything. And so, yeah, it's all there. But this poor girl is forced by her indoctrination to now have to connect this event that she's describing with the Cambrian explosion. It's just embarrassing. It's embarrassing. And if I went to the pharmacy and I saw her back there with one of those little scoopers counting out pills, I would be like, you know what? I'm going to go somewhere else.
Yeah. How many are you counting there? Are you plus or minus 30, whatever?
Uh-huh. Is it plus or minus 30 pills?
Or something you're supposed to have 1 milligram
right,
of?
Right. If I'm supposed to take two of these every 8 hours, are you going to tell me to take 250 every 8 hours? I'm a little worried about that, Doc.
Well, right. And I don't remember the exact reference, but I'll share it. I'll give it to our video producers, and hopefully we'll just go ahead and show this on the show. But it's something in a high school textbook that says this particular formation is 250,000 years old. Plus or minus 250,000 years.
I love it.
And this makes it into our textbooks, and people read this, and they think old, even though it said plus or minus 250,000 years.
Yeah, right.
So it's incredible what leaps and bounds you have to go through to avoid the truth. And honestly, with her, I don't know, because I do know a lot of creationists that were like her, who thought like her. I thought, not completely like that, but I believed in millions of years. So a lot of us are just brainwashed, and maybe Dr. Behat?
Bot.
Yeah, you know, maybe she'll see our show. If you guys, whoever's watching, go leave comments on our show and her show and point back to our show.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we can get her on the air and we can discuss, you know, have a friendly discussion with her on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right.
That would be worthwhile. That would be worthwhile.
Yeah. And by the way, her short on this aired not that long ago, and it had, at the time that we've recorded the show, is 1.3 million views.
Yeah.
Now, our show will probably get anywhere from 5,000 to 50,000 views. That depends on the YouTube algorithm.
Yeah,
so we're going to be much less than hers. And, you know, it's this whole spiritual warfare that we're in, trying to get the truth out for things that are just common sense.
Yes. Well, you know, the world is far more attracted to things that appeal to their flesh. And so, of course, she's going to get millions of views because her content appeals to the flesh.
Well, so that's a perfect lead into the next article about appealing to the flesh, and that's magic mushrooms.
Okay.
Hey, magic but before mushrooms. We do that, I wonder if this is the time for the interesting fact of the week.
Well, okay. So before we get to the interesting fact of the week, I just want to finish off the topic. So, young Dr. Bach.
Well, you're really trying to avoid interesting fact of the week.
No, this is really good. This is really deep, Fred. Dr. Bach has this amazingly vast differential, potential differential, 250 million to 1.5 billion years. So, I just want, Dr. Bott, if you have a chance to read Genesis chapter 6 through chapter 8, maybe throw in chapter 9 too if you want more of the story. The Bible actually says precisely how many days the event lasted to the day. It says the day of the month that it started, and it lists the day of the month that it ended, that Noah came off the ark and was able to walk around on dry ground. So the Bible does not have a vast differential of potential time in guessing maybe what might have happened. The Bible contains actually what we know so far. Anyway,
exactly.
So I just want to point Dr. Bott and everyone else in the audience to that. So, magic mushrooms. And this is a story that's not just about magic mushrooms, which that's going to boost our potential viewership right there, Fred. We'll have to put that in the tags that we talked about magic mushrooms, because that will generate clicks and views. People are interested.
Absolutely.
But this is about evolution and magic mushrooms.
Correct.
Together.
So this is an article. Let me pull this up. It's from the AAA Science Magazine, right?
Yes, science.org.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And the name of the article is, in a mind-blowing twist, magic mushrooms evolved twice.
Twice?
Twice, independently.
Independently?
Independently.
Wow, those are some magic mushrooms.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm hoping I say this word right. So psilocybe mushrooms. Does that sound right, Doug?
Psilocybe. Yeah, well, the P is silent. So it's like the psilocybe. H in Dr. It's like the H in Dr. Behat's name. It's silent.
Go. Bat. Okay.
It's psilocybe. Bot. And this is psilocybe, okay. Right?
Psilocybe mushrooms proceed sequentially, whereas fiber caps, by contrast, make both compounds side by side.
Okay, now so you got
using none of the same enzymes.
Psilocybe mushrooms are a certain type of mushroom,
yep.
But then there's fiber cap mushroom, yep. Different type of mushrooms.
Yep.
Okay, just to be clear, and they both make a certain compound.
Yeah.
Which is psilocybin, which is the psychedelic component of magic mushrooms.
Exactly. And so the psilocybe mushrooms, they build that thing sequentially. Whereas fiber caps, they make both compounds side by side. So it's a different mechanism. So this is what the article says. The two types of mushrooms live in different niches. Niches?
Niche.
Okay.
Okay, so if you're like me and you grow up, if you grew up on the wrong side of the tracks as something like white trash or a redneck, it's a niche.
A niche, okay.
Yeah, and we go to the niche down by the creek. So, but if you're a little higher end, and let's say you were from Manhattan, it's a niche.
Niche.
Yeah, and then if you're from Denver, it's a niche.
I was visiting a friend in Pennsylvania.
Yeah?
And they had a friend of theirs, potential future daughter-in-law, which isn't anymore. Apparently, they broke up. But she came over, and she's very crass, and apparently she said he wanted to see if she wanted some venison. And she's like, no, that's poor man's beef.
Oh,
unbelievable. So
it's only poor man's beef if you pull it off the grill of a car before you put it up on the barbecue. Yeah. Otherwise,
I've had some really good venison. Anyways.
Pretty good.
Okay, so psilocybe mushrooms tend to grow in decomposing materials such as cow dung and wood mulch.
Okay.
Whereas fiber caps are symbiotic with trees, which means they help trees and trees help the mushrooms.
Okay.
So even so, the two mushrooms independently evolved to produce the same molecule.
Uh-huh.
Now researchers are left with another puzzle. Why did two different mushroom lineages end up making the same hallucinogen?
Why?
Yes.
Well, they go on to say convergent evolution. So that's one of their magic wands that they wave.
Okay.
Suggests something confers a particular selective advantage. Slot says, that's the name of the scientist. He says, what the advantage is could be obvious if it was like how eyes that see predators or wings that increase mobility and range. But for chemical features like psilocybin, it is much less obvious.
Yeah, what's the advantage to the one mushroom? What's the advantage to the other mushroom? What is the advantage that would have driven simultaneous, or I guess not simultaneous, but two separate pathways of evolution and two different types of mushrooms? What was the advantage to each mushroom? That makes it very complicated.
Well, it does, but they've got an explanation to it.
Oh!
Now, is it an explanation or is it, you know, storytelling? You know, storytelling to me always has a connotation that it's kind of a fable. Even though storytelling can be used as actual telling a true story.
Yes.
You know, because she is the good doctor from the previous segment. She was a storyteller.
She claims to be a scientific storyteller.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, well, let's listen to this story.
Okay.
One possibility is that psilocybin exerts a discombobulating and presumably unappetizing experience in insects and other animals, deterring them from munching on the mushrooms.
Okay.
He says psilocybin likely plays a role in chemical defense. Okay.
It's reasonable.
Okay. Says Bernd Dettinger, a biochemist at the National History Museum of Utah, who is not involved in the study.
Okay. That's okay. He doesn't have to be involved in the study to be able to make a credible comment about it.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see here. Okay.
Has he ever been high on magic mushrooms?
I think the next statement says that he has.
Okay, let's see.
He says, on the other hand, animals, such as Homo sapiens, so I guess we're animals.
Always
like to put us in the category of animals. And they wonder why kids act like animals when you continually tell them that they're animals and not created in God's image.
Hello, they'll behave like animals.
That's why we're, what we see in society today with all the killings that we have in high schools and everything. Anyways,
yes,
I digress.
Yeah.
So he said, on the other hand, animals such as Homo sapiens might enjoy the trippy experience, which could encourage predators to eat the mushroom, causing them to pass its spores along as the animals move.
Okay.
Doug, you can't make this stuff up. It sounds like we said earlier, this author was enjoying some of the mushrooms at the time that he was writing them.
Not only has he taken them, he was on them when he wrote this.
They just totally ignore the obvious design. I mean, to even have these chemical reactions to do the things that they do. How did the mushroom even evolve? They can't explain any of this.
It's ridiculous.
Yep.
The designer of the mushrooms incorporated the psilocybin molecule in both types of mushrooms when he created them for the purposes of, the purposes that they're hitting on here are probably have something to do with the purpose of the molecule.
Yeah. Okay.
But to say that evolved on two separate paths, it's just crazy, silly. It's a story. And the thing is, Fred, a convincing story that's actually entertaining, it has to have enough truth in it to be compelling. And this is just kind of out there on the ridiculous end of things.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Crazy. So we almost forgot, Doug. You almost got away with it. You almost avoided the interesting fact of the week.
Oh, no. The interesting fact of the week. If you were advertising your product or service on Real Science Radio, this is the part where we would drop in your advertisement. So go to rsr.org, get in touch with us, and advertise your product or your service right here on Real Science Radio and sponsor the interesting fact of the week.
Yep. Okay. So, Doug, here it is. Here's the interesting fact of the week.
Okay.
Which country's national animal is the unicorn?
Countries have national animals?
They do.
Okay, so I know that we have like national flowers and trees. Well, I didn't know we had national. I know it's like a state flower. Colorado state flower is the Columbine.
The Columbine, yes.
Yeah, I knew that.
Yeah.
Okay, which nation's national animal is the unicorn?
Correct. Which one?
Well, people claim that the unicorn is a fictitious animal that never existed. That's what people claim.
They claim that, but it could have been the first animal off the ark, right? And then following it was the tiger. And that's why we never see him.
The tiger caught up with the ape.
It's like Noah's like, oops, that was a mistake. Okay, let's do this in better order.
We need
this. We're a fallen creation. We got it.
You need to change the order of people getting off the ark. By then, the tiger was long gone. Yeah. All right. Now, people also claim that dragons and fire-breathing dragons are also mythical creatures that never existed. But the Bible indicates...
Chinese don't say that.
The Bible indicates that both dragons and unicorns did exist in some form. Now, they might not be the unicorn that you see in the cartoons with the horse with the horn. Maybe it wasn't exactly that. I'm going to guess that the country whose national animal is the unicorn, I'm going to narrow it down to somewhere in Southeast Asia, and I'm just going to say Bali. You had your finger on that red button. There was no way I was going to get
you had
that.
So the country is Scotland.
Scotland?
Yeah.
Get out of here.
And so, yeah, I wonder if Ireland's is the leprechaun. But, but yeah, Scotland's national animal is the unicorn.
Okay, well, I should know that. I'm Scots-Irish by descent.
Oh, there? Okay.
Yeah, now but I have to become more familiar with my ethnic heritage. I need to get in touch with my inner ethnic.
The country's national animals.
Wow.
You know what the United States is, right? It's got to be the eagle. You would think.
I think so.
Yeah.
That's right. That would be our national animal. Russia is the bear.
Yeah.
China is the dragon. I'm just making these up, Fred.
Yeah.
But Colorado is the bronco.
Yeah. Obviously. Yeah, probably. And like I said, Ireland is probably the leprechaun.
Right.
Sorry to our Irish friends out there. So I'm going to get emails about that.
Oh, the Irish, we're good at taking
it. So if you're really upset about that comment, please send your email to doug@rsr.org.
And by the way, if you're offended that we laughed and had fun with Dr. Bott's name, just please go back and look at all the guff the Irish have taken over the last 500 years, and please just give us a break. You can make fun of our names and the fact that we come from a long line of alcoholics and we see leprechauns and things under bridges, so we can have fun with people's names. If you can't have fun with stuff like that, you're just way too uptight. Get over yourself.
Yep.
All right.
So, Doug, we have time for one more news story.
Okay. Did we want to talk about the anti-autism recommendations made by the FDA? Just real quickly, Fred.
I think it's worth it. Let's talk about this one.
Autism has been a controversial subject, and I have to tell you that for many years, I thought that most autism was primarily the result of undisciplined child rearing, is that parents simply never disciplined their children, and so their children's behavior was bad. And there's plenty of that out there, Fred.
Yeah.
But I now realize, being a little older now, that autism is definitely a thing, that something has happened in the recent two generations of children that's different than what was happening before.
Yeah. And before we do this, I mean, I don't know what you're going to kind of throw this one in. I'm like, I'm actually real curious to hear your take on it. This is new for me, what your
thoughts are. Autism is almost like geology, Fred. There's a spectrum. And a vast part of the spectrum is parents simply not disciplining and raising their children right. And so their children chronically misbehave, and the parents are told your child is autistic, and they put them on this drug or that drug or whatever.
Or Asperger's disease.
Well, Asperger's and ADHD are all now part of this autism spectrum.
Is it really? Okay.
It's all part of this, Okay. And the whole history of autism is very dark. And the people who defined it as a psychological disorder were very dark and wicked, godless people who began classifying human beings as if they were animals, actually. It's very dark. And if you want to look into the history of autism and look into Asperger himself and find out about it. But I've met and encountered enough friends and associates whose children have obviously had some sort of event in their life that have caused them to become what we would have called mentally retarded back in the day when you could say that without freaking everybody out and making people cry. Some kids were mentally retarded. Now, mentally retarded just means that their mental growth and advancement at some point in their life was stopped and retarded. We used to call those kids mentally retarded, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of that, back when I was a little kid, the retarded kids were born that way. And it was a birth defect. But over the past 40 years, it's obvious that children have gone and grown from birth to 2 or 3 or 4 years, and then some event happens. Their growth is stunted. Their mental, psychological, spiritual growth is stunted and retarded by something.
Yep.
And we don't know what it is, and enough of it has happened to convince me that it is a thing. And so the reason I threw this in, Fred, was because I think that the recent government recommendations around autism, to me, seems sensible. And I rarely say that anything the government does seems sensible. But here's what the FDA has recommended. They said pregnant women should not take Tylenol unless their lives are threatened. And this is so funny, Fred. This points out the political stupidity that's happening in America. Women, after the FDA announced this, there were videos posted on TikTok of pregnant women taking handfuls of Tylenol and saying, "I hate Donald Trump."
Well, unbelievable.
If you have degenerated to that level of political stupidity,
yeah.
Well, I just feel sorry for you. So after this all came out, Fred, the company that makes Tylenol said, "Look, we've been issuing warnings against pregnant women taking Tylenol for a long, long time." Pretty much, if I recall, Fred, I work in and around medicine. Pretty much, pregnant women aren't allowed to do anything at all. They'd say, "Please, just sit still and don't move the whole time." Just certainly don't be taking pills, any kind of pills, right? So the government is recommending don't take Tylenol unless there's a life-threatening condition. That seems reasonable to me.
That
they would make that. Also, in vaccinating children, they're saying we should spread vaccines out over a much longer period of time. That just seems very reasonable to me, to spread out that. If you're going to be injecting a child with something that is immunomodulatory, I wouldn't do that all at once. It would seem like it would be better. That just seems to make sense to me. Is it possible that we have been over-medicating and over-vaccinating people for the last 40 or 50 years? Well, think about what happens. Human beings have a tendency to overreact. Think about what happens at, I don't know what to use as let's say a school shooting. A school shooting happens, which is so common now that it hardly makes the front pages unless it's really terrible. But when a school shooting happens, within an hour of the killing or whatever happens at the school, there's hundreds and hundreds of police cars, fire engines. The whole school is covered with police. It's just a gross overreaction. This is human nature to a threatening or tragic or criminal event. Mm-hmm. We tend to overreact. So back in the mid-20th century, we started discovering vaccines could help. We started discovering drugs and antibiotics that could help. Well, is it unreasonable to assume that we've kind of overdone it with all of that?
Yeah.
It's possible.
And something changed. Like you said, you know, I know parents who have autistic kids. Something that wasn't common, like you said, 3 generations ago, something changed.
Yes.
And is it unreasonable to, and you can call it speculation, whatever you want. I know there's some science behind it.
Yeah.
That there's something going on. And because of the whole COVID thing, you know, the left has become so pro-vaccine, you know, and if, you know, overdoing it.
Yes, yes.
And I know RFK has been preaching against the overuse of vaccines. He was never anti-vax. So they always lied about when they said he was anti-vax. But
right.
This spreading vaccines out over a much longer period is a recommendation. To me, that makes sense. It's common sense.
Right. And it will give us the opportunity to analyze the data going forward. And we might find out that this is a reasonable thing to do. That
there is a connection.
Yes, yes. Split certain vaccines into more than one injection. So it just seems logical to me. If you can do something that's not going to cause harm, but might give us a better, at least a better data set to look at as far as what we should be doing. Well, certainly that's something we should try. And no mercury or aluminum should be in vaccines. Hepatitis, so okay. Mercury and aluminum, I personally don't want any of that. I mean, I want it.
How harmful mercury is.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I want mercury in my neon sign, and I want argon, and I want aluminum on the siding on my house. Anyway,
I want to be chowing down on it.
I want to, yeah.
I don't want aluminum or I don't want mercury in my ahi tuna steaks.
No.
I can't eat too many of them because there's trace enough.
That's right. That's right. So we don't want mercury or aluminum in our dinner. So yeah, maybe I don't want it in something that you're injecting into my child.
Yeah.
Certainly, if we could do vaccines without mercury and aluminum, let's do that. See how that works out.
Yep.
Okay. I think it's reasonable. Hepatitis B should not be given until the child is 12. Okay. Maybe I don't want my kid having the Hep B shot at all, frankly. Why do we have to give that? Maybe we do want them to have that. Certainly, parents and other human beings should be given the option of when to receive injections into our bodies. And so it just seems reasonable, maybe delaying this very powerful Hep B vaccine, by the way, that has a very highly immunomodulatory event occurs when you get this vaccine, probably better to wait till the kid's bigger and stronger. Makes sense to me. So these are some of the recommendations that have come out. I think it's reasonable.
I'm looking at it now. It's from the Health and Human Services, title of the article, President Trump, Secretary Kennedy announced bold actions to tackle autism epidemic.
Yeah.
This was released on September 22nd, so just last month.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is an interesting topic.
Yeah, and so I would just...
makes sense.
I would encourage RFK and President Trump to add to this, if you want to help with all of the spectrum of autism, recommend family Bible study and spanking.
Yeah, absolutely.
And good child rearing practices. If you would add that to all these other common sense items that you've recommended, I think you could help with the physiological, chemical issues that are happening with autism, along with the emotional, psychological, spiritual events that is contributing to a significant portion of the spectrum of what is called the autism spectrum. And we welcome input and debate. And if RFK wants to come on the show and we could help him out, I'm sure he could use our advice. Because RFK doesn't get any of his advice from the Bible. We get almost all of our guidance. That's what RFK's into, guidance. We get almost all of our guidance from the Bible. That's where we start with guidance. And so if what we do could help RFK, we'd be happy to contribute. And yeah. So
absolutely.
Okay.
Okay, Doug. Well, I think we're out of time.
Okay. Well, that was fun.
It was a lot of fun. It was always great to have you actually in the studio.
Yes.
You're out visiting this week. You've got your medical business that you're in.
Yes, yes.
And so, it's always interesting to hear about that.
So. Well, and I will keep you updated on my lactose experience. And the next time I come and stay with you, I might have to mask up if I find out that might help.
Okay, so for my co-host, Doug McBurney, I'm Fred Williams of Real Science Radio. May God bless you. Intelligent.